everyone. Welcome to the Harbor and Sprout podcast. Today, we are so excited to be here with Tristan Gooley, the natural navigator and author of The Lost Art of Reading Nature's Signs, along with a number of other titles. Tristan is somebody that we look up to a lot over at Harbor and Sprout. We just think he's incredible. He's all kinds of fun to follow along with on social media. And his natural navigation course online is just incredible. So we'll link all of that in the show notes. But to introduce him, Tristan Gooley is, in a small nutshell, a writer and a natural navigator. Having followed along with him for some time, he seems to always be up to some kind of fascinating adventure and project. Tristan set up his natural navigation school in 2008 and is the author of award-winning and internationally best-selling books, including The Natural Navigator, The Lost Art of Reading Nature's Signs, How to Read Water, The Secret World of Weather, and his new book, How to Read a Tree, some of the world's only books covering natural navigation. He has spent decades hunting for clues and signs in nature across the globe and has been nicknamed the Sherlock Holmes of Nature by the BBC. His passion for the subject of natural navigation stems from his hands-on experience. He has led expeditions in 5 continents, climbed mountains in Europe, Africa, and Asia, sailed small boats across oceans, and piloted small aircraft to Africa and the Arctic. He is the only living person to have both flown solo and sailed single-handedly across the Atlantic, and he is a fellow of the Royal Institute of Navigation and the Royal Geographical Society. And now he's here to speak with us today, and we could not be more honored. So welcome, Tristan, to our podcast. We would love to hear, first, what sparked your interest in natural navigation in the first place?
Hi, Danielle. Thanks for that kind introduction, and thank you for having me on your podcast. My interest was sparked. There were some stepping stones. I was quite a restless kid, and I used to look at hills and think it might be more fun at the top, or look at a lake and think, how do I get across that, or even just a pond. And what happened was the hills became mountains and the lakes became oceans. The journeys became quite big. But through that process, I had to learn how to use modern navigational equipment. And a lot of it's amazing kit, but it's a lot of it is staring at screens and dials. And it wasn't the feeling I'd had as a child, the excitement of going on small explorations. And so what I did in my 20s was I turned everything on its head and started, instead of doing really big expeditions, doing much smaller ones, and just seeing if I could find my way across a mile or two using the trees or the moon or the flowers or the birds to help me find my way.
I think that you are in good company of a lot of both children and adults who look out the window and say, I think I'd rather be out there doing that than sitting in here. So that, I love that. That's incredible to learn to use what you have around you instead of the modern technology that, yes, it's helpful, but also does it maybe detract a little bit from the experience itself? How have you honed those skills? I mean, you're talking about looking at the water, looking at the trees, looking at the moon. That seems like something that needs to be somewhat innate that you kind of had to really hone within yourself.
Yeah, there's a sort of different stages to learning these skills. And it starts with making a fun collection. Just learning about how to find the North Star, for example, it's really not complex. We can learn it at a very young age. And then once we've learned it, we've got it the rest of our life. And you know, knowing the sun is due south in the middle of the day, you add that to the collection. And then there are literally thousands of clues which are on the ground, which I think of as the sky leaving footprints on the ground. So the sun or the wind or rain will leave clues on the ground. So we get more puddles on the south side of tracks, for example. And that what starts as a collection, a simple collection, and I think all of us can kind of relate to that idea that when you find something that's fun, it's nice to collect it. And we're not talking about having to, you know, buy loads of expensive things here. These are just things we can observe, and they form part of a personal collection, and we can all have them. There's no shortage of these things. We can all share them. And then what happens is you practice using them, and then it goes from sort of thinking, okay, I've got to use a method to find the North Star. You once you've done it a dozen times, your brain's really good, because we all come from a background of our ancestors doing these things, and our brain, you know, is practiced at this sort of thing. So it takes over, and it goes from being like an exercise to just an instant intuitive thing where you just look at the night sky and you're sensing direction, and that's a really fun stage.
Oh, I love that. And so this seems like a collection just to have in your pocket that you started at a young age and just have continued to build upon until it's really hardwired within you now, and something that you always use. And that's,
yeah, I think it's a really good, it's a good way of forming a relationship with ancestors that we'll never meet, because you do get a genuine sense of how they saw landscapes and how they saw the sky, because it's very hard to imagine how people were experiencing things thousands of years ago. But I think practical skills, even if you're not going on journeys, even if you're just, you know, standing in your backyard and trying to find south using a tree, for example, you start to see the tree differently. And it just gives me a sense that it's almost like reaching out and shaking hands with our ancestors.
I love that. You know, it's funny that you're saying that you start to notice these things. I've caught myself now noticing, okay, that tree is growing mostly in that direction. It looks like it's been affected by the wind or affected by, it's very fun to think all these signs and all of these clues, they're really right in front of us if we just know where to look and how to find them and how to utilize them.
Definitely. Yeah, they are everywhere. And that I think is it's not where I'd recommend starting, because it's a bit overwhelming if you're new to it. But it's an exciting place to head towards, is the idea that everything is a clue or a sign. So instead of thinking, well, there are maybe 20 things and I'm going to try and learn 20 and then I've completed it, I've done natural navigation, it's not that sort of subject. It's, you get to the point when you've been doing it a few years where you realize that everything in nature is trying to tell us something. But early on, that's a bit overwhelming. You kind of walk out there and go, wow, there's too much going on. So early on, I recommend keep it simple. You know, take some of the big sort of bold, easy clues, have some fun with them, and then you can add to the collection, and later on you can have fun sort of thinking everything's a clue.
Well, and here now you are years into it with lots of that knowledge and understanding under your belt, so that you can take that and expand it continually, but it's part of you at this point in time. That's really cool that you see everything as a clue. So if you had to choose, I know you've kind of specialized in a lot of different facets of nature, but which is the most intriguing to you if you had to choose?
Well, it sounds like a bit of a soft answer, but it is very honest. I'm not somebody who has favorites, in the sense that a lot of people who love nature do have favorites. They love, let's say, butterflies, or they might love rocks, or they might love clouds. And I love all those things. One of the wonderful things about natural navigation for me is that we don't focus on one thing. So there are some people who they just love fungi. That's all they kind of want to look at. Or do you guys say fungi or fungi?
Fungi.
Yeah.
They're
yeah,
fungi. And,
fungi. Yeah. And the thing with that is that it you know, it works for some people, but I'm one of those people who likes to hop about. I like to think about different things every day, and I like to change my focus. I might want to think about the weather, you know, for half an hour one day, and later the same day I might want to think about how a stinging nettle's growing. So that's my favorite thing, is the you know, the options within natural navigation to focus on different things at different times.
So the conglomeration of nature as a whole, maybe all the pieces and what they create together.
Yes, definitely. That is, I the thing that really excites me is the way things are connected. Mm-hmm. And I think people use that in a vague general sense a lot, and don't necessarily know even what they mean by nature being connected. But natural navigation is very much about understanding how pieces fit together. So we understand that the trees might be bigger on the south side because the sun is due south in the middle of the day, giving us lots of light then. Those are two sort of pieces of the jigsaw, but the jigsaw has, you know, I don't want to put people off, but it has a million pieces. And the way the tree is growing is also affected by the wind. The wind is affected by the other trees and the shape of the hill. is even affected by the nearby town, and the town is changing the clouds, which is changing both the light and the wind. You can see, you know, it very quickly gets to the point where it's like, whoa, you know, but that is an exciting thing for me. Again, I wouldn't recommend early on that you want to try and see everything is connected, but it's quite a fun exercise to go out there and just pick two different things and say, can I find a connection between them?
So this far in, do you still on the regular find things that surprise you or shock and amaze?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And it's there's a sort of a fateful part to it, in the sense that if I go out trying to find a particular new thing, it sometimes feels a bit tricky, sometimes feels a bit frustrating, but I very often come back with a totally new thing. So I've been writing a book called How to Read a Tree for a few years, and it's, you know, just about to come out. And I, as part of that, I include a clue about the shape of tree roots, because lots of people, if you ask somebody to draw a tree, they typically draw the trunk going straight down to the ground. But if you look at the base of most trees, it spreads out at the bottom as the trunk becomes the roots. And those roots are not symmetrical. Nothing in a tree is symmetrical. We get more bigger, stronger roots on the side that prevailing winds come from. So depending where you live, that can change a bit. But in most parts of you know, North America, and indeed most of the temperate parts of the world, there'll be westerlies, wind from the west or the southwest are very common, but it may be different where you live. And I thought I had that pattern tied down, and I was looking for something entirely different. I can't even remember what I was looking for. And I suddenly noticed another pattern, which is the roots point out of the woods as well, because at the edge of the woods, that's where all the strong winds are coming from. Oh. So if you find a wood that's, you know, let's say it's a small little wood, what we call in these parts a copse, you know, maybe it's only takes sort of 5 or 10 minutes to walk across. What you'll find is a lot of the roots at the edge of the woods or near the edge of the woods are pointing out of the woods, because near the edge of the woods, that's where the strong winds can reach. Whereas in the middle of the wood, there's very few strong winds can reach. And I've been looking at tree roots and using them for natural navigation for 20 years and never noticed that. And I just suddenly noticed it was the most extraordinarily fun moment.
And the interesting thing is you explaining that to me, I think, well, that makes so much sense. And it's just wild that it's not completely common understanding, some of these things that you pointed out, and you say, oh, well, yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's just,
yeah, that's
it's
a
intuitive.
Nice. It's a really rewarding thing about my work is that what I tend to be doing is finding things that are obvious in hindsight. So yeah. The things that you just kind of, when you see, you've seen them two or three times, you can't help but see them the rest of your life. Some things have stayed in popular culture as being still obvious. So a good example is tree rings. Most people, children and adults, are still familiar, I hope anyway, with the idea that we can get a rough idea how old a tree was when it was chopped down by counting the rings. So that's something that's obvious. But the shape of that tree trunk will not be a perfect circle. And where the heart, what we think would be the center of that, is won't be in the center. And where it is telling us about direction. It's telling us about winds and things like that. And when we start to see those patterns for the first time, they're obvious. But most people can go their whole life and not see them. So they're only obvious in hindsight. So the rings are obvious. Almost everybody spots them and understands them. Whereas where the heart of the tree is positioned is only obvious when, you know, hopefully with my help, I can kind of show people how to spot them. And then people go, oh yeah, I've never noticed that the heart's not in the middle.
Oh yeah. I think that's my favorite thing about your books, is that it's like this gift of knowledge. Like here's all of the things that you could understand, and you can go, it's not really super hard to find these things once you know what you're looking for, but you really need somebody who has taken the time and effort to document it and write it down and to notice it in the first place. And so for me, I pick up a book and I think, oh my goodness, thank goodness somebody wrote this down for me so that I can utilize that understanding and feel more connected to the entire earth. I love it.
No, thank you.
So why to you, I mean, you touched on this with kind of the ancestral connection, but why is it important to you to be in tune with nature and its signs?
I see it as almost a personal and almost a philosophical investment, in the sense that the more It's an investment in ourselves and the world around us. So the more that we see clues and signs, the more meaning we find, the more connection we have. And again, that word is thrown around and people don't always, how do you form a connection with a, you know, a tree, for example, by looking for clues and signs. And what it does is two things. It can make us feel better as individuals. It is genuinely good for our well-being. There's lots and lots of evidence that spending time in nature is good for us. But by noticing things, we care more about them. So there's one example. There were a pair of trees, a pair of yew trees on a hill a few miles from my home. And nobody really in the world, as far as I'm aware, ever noticed these trees. But I used to run courses where I'd show people the trees and show them how the branches at the top have been bent over by southwesterly winds. And we could use that as a compass. And then somebody came along, somebody, I didn't see it happen, but the trees disappeared. They got chopped down. And the reason was they wanted more grazing animals there, and yew trees are poisonous. So they had a reason to do it. But if I'd been able to stop that, I would have tried to stop it. I might have failed. But my main point really is that people, I mean, literally tens of thousands of people over the years would have walked past those trees. They're next to a very busy path. But nobody would have cared about that tree the same way I did, or some of the people I'd shown the sign to, because I'd genuinely formed that connection. So that's, for me, it's a win-win. We feel better ourselves, but we also genuinely start to form relationships with the nature around us, and then we care more about it. Sometimes chopping down a tree is the right thing to do, sometimes it's not, but if you form the connection and the relationship, you're invested in that tree or those trees, and at that point you really care about outcomes and how people are behaving around them.
I love that it's something that is important, that you care about deeply personally. It's a connection in many senses of the word, I think, which is why, yes, you can say connection, but really there's a very deep meaning to what that connection is. Is there anything that is especially fascinating to you in the world of natural navigation? Right now, of course, you've got trees on the mind, but in all your years and in all your discoveries, what's something that has just been especially fascinating to you?
I think it's I could probably list lots and lots of things, but the thing that's on my mind at the moment is actually what I might call how the subject is so generous in terms of seasons. Because I mentioned fungi earlier, but we could pick anything. If you're really into foraging, or you're really into hunting, or you're really into a particular activity, what we tend to find is there's a real spike in when's good. You know, with fungi, we tend to find, you know, late summer into fall is an interesting time. And there are other interesting times. If you're really into wildflowers, of course, spring and early summer are really, really sort of peak times. But there's less on off. The thing I find so I'm really grateful for with natural navigation is you can pick any day of the year and something will be rising to the, you know, to the foreground. So what we find is in the middle of winter, for example, it's not a great time for flowers and a lot of plants, but it and a lot of animals, but it's a fantastic time often for the night sky. What I find is extraordinary and grateful is the word, is that with an interest in natural navigation, it's like you get handed something new almost every week. Sure, something gets taken away, but you get handed something new as well. So there is, you know, there's and it's all changing. So you can pick any day, any week of the year, and natural navigation will bring something to the you know, the foreground for you to have a bit of fun with. And I absolutely love that.
Oh, I love that. It's making me think of your answer about what facet of nature is your favorite. Well, all the facets. Well, what part of it's your favorite? Well, all the parts, because there's always something special, and there's always, you can tell that you're the right person to be doing this.
That's a really lovely compliment.
It's very fun to hear somebody who genuinely really loves what they do and is passionate about what they do talk about what they do. I think that's just one of my favorite things. And I love that answer. It's a good reminder that there's really something special about all the parts of the year, even the ones that don't get the attention for being the wildflower part. So I'm sure that you have an absolute wealth of stories, but are there any stories or anecdotes that you particularly would like to share?
There is one, actually, because you have, you know, parents and young people listening. I sometimes, when we look at an adult who's been fortunate enough to find a job and a career that you know is enjoyable and fun, it's easy to kind of think, well, that's how it was always meant to be. That's a lucky person. That was always. But there's a very long version of this, but I'll try and keep it sort of brief. But when I was a child, I didn't find life particularly easy. You know, there's not sort of, you know, horror stories or anything. I found youth really, really difficult. And it wasn't anybody's fault. I don't think it was one of those things. But the reason I say that is that I think navigation was the thing that helped me start to realize that when life's difficult, it's sort of telling us, it's sending us messages about, you know, maybe where we are meant to be choosing to go. Now, we have to be careful. Sometimes life is difficult and we are meant to go through those things. But what I mean is, when I was a young person, there was at times, particularly when I was a teenager and even younger, when there was this sort of feeling like, you know, everybody else seems to sort of understand things and everybody seems to, you know, that person's really good at sport and that person's really good at music. Kind of what's my sort of thing? And that, you know, that actually it's a difficult feeling when we're young. But when I got taken on a summer holiday with my mum and my sister, the three of us, and we went to this little island a few miles off the south coast of England. And she put me onto a dinghy sailing course. And at the end of this course, which I didn't want to do because I found it sort of made me anxious, meeting new people, doing new things as a shy kid. And the instructor said, where would you like to go on the final day? And navigation, and that moment was when I suddenly realized that, you know, if we learn some skills in something that we find, you know, enjoyable or interesting, because I did enjoy the course in the end, you get to a point where you can actually choose where you go. So that feeling sort of uncomfortable, not really sure what to do when we're younger, it gets so much better once we learn how to find a path. And the path doesn't have to be navigation. It certainly doesn't have to be natural navigation. My point is really that there comes a moment where we get clues in terms of how we can choose our own path. And then the fun thing is the uncomfortable feelings get turned into joy, because we suddenly, instead of waking up every day going, I'm really no idea what I'm meant to be doing with my time on planet Earth, they get converted into, well, I've got a bit of an idea of what I'm meant to be doing. And then before you know it, you've practiced it. And then the world starts sort of saying, no, you're quite good at that. And that's a lovely, lovely moment. So it's not for my benefit I'm telling that story. It's just that there may be parents or you know, children who know what I mean by that feeling, like, you know, which way am I meant to go? And like, what am I meant to do? That in itself is a bit of a clue to keep sort of, you know, trying different things. And then when you find something that's rewarding, it's almost like a sign saying there's a path here. And an interest in navigation can help you with that idea. It can help you with the idea that we can choose, you know, directions to go. They're not always easy, but we can choose. And that's a much, much nicer feeling than thinking life is something that happens to me and other people choose how that happens. So it's quite a big idea, but I really did want to share that because when I was young, I'd see, you know, stories of people doing adventurous sort of things and just think, well, they're kind of the people who are sorted. And then there are other people, and I might be one of those other people where things aren't sorted. But life's not like that. Everybody has moments where they feel like they're not sorted, but understanding that we can learn skills and we can choose paths. And then, you know, you find a path where you sort of go, this is quite good fun. And if you keep going, it's not long before you're feeling joy and people are saying, yeah, you're quite good at that. And that's a nice feeling. So I did really want to share that. Sorry if that's a bit of a long answer.
But... No. Oh, I love that. I think that's just waking up all kinds of things it's going to wake up all kinds of things and all kinds of people to say, I can find something that I love and I can own it. Even when I don't already know how to do it, then I can carry on and learn it, and it can be mine, and it can be something that is uniquely special to me and be great at it. I mean, and now you've spent this entire lifetime, half a lifetime, building on this understanding that you have worked really hard on. I mean, none of this has been, it's probably been obviously a natural interest, but it's been a lot of work for you to be where you are and to know what you do now, and so many experiences. And sometimes you probably did feel like you had no idea what you were doing, or maybe I'm putting that in your mouth, but I sure feel like I don't know what I'm doing all the time. So It feels. But then when you find something that sets your soul afire, don't let go of that. I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
So for my own personal interest, have you seen the Northern Lights?
I have not, and it's I haven't seen a display that I would that would be worthy of the name Northern Lights. I've seen glimpses where I've gone, oh, I think that is, but no. And but I part of me is like sort of sad I haven't seen them, and part of me is kind of like, oh, it's so nice, I've spent so many hours outdoors and there's still sort of treasures to find.
Something
have
left.
you
No, but that's one of my lifelong dreams. I have this thing for reading books about polar explorers, like polar sea explorers. I don't, it's just fascinating to me to think about the cold and the ice and the polar dark and seeing the Northern Lights. I don't know. It's just something I've got to see them someday. I've got time
Have
for that.
you read about Shackleton at all?
Yes, I think it's my favorite book, probably. At least my top five.
What, one of the biographies of him or one of his books, or?
I read Endurance.
My only reason for asking was that Shackleton played a bit of a role in my life, actually, because I found him inspirational, but I also found him a bit, I thought I'd find him a bit daunting. But the really fun thing is, which fits with exactly what we were talking about a few minutes ago, is that Shackleton's a great example of where if you only look at the stuff he did brilliantly, you can fall into, you know, the way of thinking, which I might have done as a youngster, that, oh, he's one of those superhero types. He is the goody in the movie. He is the person who gets everything right. But what's funny is you read about his life, you realize he's rubbish at most things, completely and totally rubbish at normal life. He just happens to be incredibly, he wasn't even that a standout, you know, when things were going well on an expedition. His super skill was leading people in unbelievably difficult situations in cold, you know, inhospitable places. But, you know, 99% of the population are doing things every day that he was hopeless at. He was completely hopeless at day-to-day life. And I found that really inspirational. And now when I talk to schools and things, that's what I'm sort of saying. It's saying, like, don't ever think that, you know, schools, you're getting tested on, you know, it might be 10 different subjects and you have to try so many different sports. And the idea is, you know, I've tried different musical instruments and things like that. And, you know, wherever you're learning, you're encouraged to try so many different things, and it can be a bit overwhelming, but that's a stage of life, and as life goes on, you get to kind of discard the things that aren't you. And that's, Shackleton's a great example of that. He discarded almost everything except walking across ice, and that was the one thing he could do well. He couldn't have done the weekly shop. He was that sort of character.
Well, it's just so fun to hear that, because I think we get this imposter syndrome of, well, I'm not good at all the things and I'm kind of a misfit. And so, you know, we are bombarded by seeing people succeed at what they are good at all the time when we assume they're great at everything. And it's just so refreshing to talk to you, exuding humility about, I mean, you could brag a lot. You really could. And here you are just encouraging learning and encouraging connection and saying, you know, you can do this and you can be great at what you want to be good at. And I think that's just such a lovely takeaway, and just encouraging for me personally and for kids and parents, and that we can really excel at our thing that we really love, that really gives us life. I love that a lot. So thanks for sharing all of that. Thank you so much for making time to talk with us. This was just an absolute honor. We really appreciate your time. And we'll link all the places that people can follow along with you, and wish you the very best. I don't, did your book, How to Read a Tree, it's coming soon, right? Or did it launch already?
No, it's out 2nd of May. But if people are totally new to my work, then if you have a strong interest in trees, then that's the one to go for. But if you're not, you know, sure, then The Lost Art of Reading Nature Signs, if you're totally new to my work. You mentioned a couple at the beginning. The Lost Art of Reading Nature Signs is the North American version. The Walker's Guide to Outdoor Clues and Signs is the UK one.
Okay.
They changed the title because the word walker has a different meaning, just subtly, in the UK. walker is a sort of, it's an all-embracing word. It just means people who like the outdoors, really. You can be going for a stroll after a Sunday lunch and be a walker. Whereas, as I understand it, in North America, you're basically a hiker, or you're getting in a car is the kind of the culture. So it's a different thing. There's not that kind of middle space, which you know is a sort of slightly English thing. So the Lost Art of Reading Nature Signs is the North American one I'd recommend if you're undecided.
Right. Well, I am now resigned to develop a life of being a walker. I think that sounds just lovely.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. This was too much fun. And hopefully we'll maybe even catch you again sometime.
That would be fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast. And I think that the work you're doing is great. Everything I've seen is, I can feel the energy, and you're I'm sure exhausted to create that sense of energy, but it all looks very positive from what I can see. So keep up the good work, and thanks again for having me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Curio from Harbour and Sprout, a place to discover, adventure, and journey together. Explore the cabinet of curiosities at www.harbourandsprout.com/pages/curio. We love to hear from our family. Send a message to our social media accounts or get involved around the Curio campsite. See you again soon for more exciting experiences to share together.